Genius is a pretty loaded title, but the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation began bestowing that honor on American luminaries who shine in a variety of respective fields. They no longer call the recipients of the MacArthur grants geniuses, but they still do award $500,000 to 20 or so every year to support their work. No strings attached. Two of this year's MacArthur Fellows are from the Bay Area, former poet laureate Kay Ryan from Fairfax, and William Seeley, an associate professor of neurology at the UCSF Memory and Aging Center right here in San Francisco. I met up with Seeley at his lab in UCSF to talk with him about his significant study of frontotemporal dementia and on being recognized for his particular genius.
These are devastating illnesses. And patients come in usually with a family member because they're having a new loss of neurological function. And the function that's lost depends on which part of the brain is affected by the illness. If they have Alzheimer's disease, they may complain about progressive loss of recent memory. If they have Parkinson's, they'll say that their movements are slower, less fluid. Or maybe they have a tremor. If they have frontotemporal dementia, they usually won't complain of anything, and it will require a spouse to bring them to the clinic because their behavior and personality have changed so profoundly that they're not even aware of the change, but they can no longer behave normally in a social environment.
So how many people are affected by frontotemporal dementia in the U.S.?
Well, the estimates are about 1.5 in 100,000.
How about Alzheimer's disease?
About 150 in 100,000, so a significantly higher proportion. FTD is particularly tragic because it strikes when people are younger, maybe still have kids at home, they're still working, there are a lot of years in front of them. In contrast to Alzheimer's disease, it's still just an incredibly devastating and important illness, but it occurs later in life, and so the number of years in front of folks confronted by that disease is fewer.
So tell me about the research that you do into frontotemporal dementia.
Well, we're interested in the neuroanatomy of the disease, brain cells and neural networks that are affected in that illness. And our plan going forward is to take that information and try to translate it into some really fundamental biology, how and why those particular cells and circuits are affected in the disease.
So you're taking a map of the brain and looking at the specific parts, and even kind of if we were in a Google Maps of the brain, then you're getting closer and closer into it to see the streets and even the addresses.
Yeah, we're trying to get down to the level of the core units of computation in the brain, which are the brain cells themselves. We think that both the wide-angle Google Earth map, I guess it should be called Google Brain Map, is important for following and tracking disease, but also the very kind of focused in granular level so we can understand the initial target inside the brain cell and why those cells are targeted.
That's Bill Seeley. He's a behavioral neurologist at UCSF and a MacArthur Fellow for 2011. You are an expert on brain mapping and on the brain, certainly as much as anybody who I've ever met. What do we really know about how we think, how the brain moves thoughts around, the parts of the brain that think about anything, whether it's disease or how I'm going to get from here to my house, driving home, how I'm going to notice if that car is coming and this other thought that's in my head about my laundry list and et cetera, et cetera?
Oh, we know quite a bit about all that, actually. And we can watch the brain change dynamically in the context of those sorts of shifts in thought. We can watch different areas that are responsible for those functions light up or change their connectivity strength to each other. For example, if you were thinking about the route you took riding over here today, you would see activation in spatial areas of the brain, regions of the brain that look up information about 3D space. If you were thinking about something else like an overdue bill or something like that, we'd see an entirely different signature when we looked at your brain in action. We'd see probably a little bit of a memory circuit that called to mind the fact that that bill's still not paid, and then a little bit of an emotional kick.
Do we know then what kind of exercises or procedures or Sudoku or whatever helps us to keep our brain healthy or build up parts where we might be less strong in thought?
Well, you can change your brain by what you do. There's no question about that. And focus training does change the brain. what we'd all love is some kind of a pill, something you could do in a kind of a, like a brain workout every day that would protect all the aspects of your brain, improve the longevity of those neural networks and circuits. We don't have something like that, but I think it's a reasonable thing to keep looking for, and a lot of people are looking for that kind of a strategy.
But we could do that kind of thing with our physical bodies by exercising every day, say. I mean, if we spend an hour in the gym or we bike to work or something like that, then is there something that's comparable for the brain that, I don't know, say you put into practice or would if you had time?
Well, it's kind of, I think the analogy to the gym workout is perfect. When you go to the gym and you lift weights in a certain way, you're trying to improve the function of specific muscle groups that are put under the stress of that weight and by the way you're holding it. Now, you know, a workout, a brain workout, a dedicated workout, could do that same thing that you do in the gym with your muscles. You could improve in that one specific thing. But I think you'd agree with me that if you go to the gym and do bicep curls with your right arm, it doesn't make your left arm any stronger. And nor does it make your toe any stronger or help in any other way besides strengthening that right arm. And so I think that if I had to give, other aging brains out there in the audience like mine, advice, I'd say keep doing the things that you enjoy most and do them with vigor. I think the worst thing you can do for your brain is not use it as much as you should. And so get off the couch, do things that you find invigorating.
That's Bill Seeley. He's a behavioral neurologist at UCSF and a MacArthur Fellow for 2011. Do you know, are there any things that you know are detrimental to the brain that can help degeneration that leads to different diseases that one can get, whether it's Alzheimer's or whether it is ALS or something else, like excessive alcohol, say, or drug use or traumatic brain injuries or things like that that end up affecting it? Or is it primarily something that's hereditary or something that's passed down genetically? How do you see those balanced out?
Well, one's risk for developing one of these illnesses that I study is very complex, multifactorial calculation. But there are controllable risks, and those are probably worth the time and the focus here. So things to avoid are things that are that work against the integrity of your of the blood vessels to the brain. So those are things like smoking, probably number one, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes due to weight control problems, lack of exercise. Those all are the enemies of blood vessels that feed the brain during life, and the more wear and tear those blood vessels see over time, the higher one's risk for cognitive impairment in older age, Alzheimer's disease, vascular disease of the brain. There seems to be a vicious cycle that people can be pulled into due to those factors. On the other hand, lack of education, lack of mental engagement are also risks. And so, stay in school, use your brain during your lifespan, increase your chances of holding on to your marbles late in life.